to give a brief introduction. I am here with David Fuller, a guy who's done just about everything you can in the pro wrestling industry. He has wrestled, he has promoted, he has managed. I think he's done everything but be a woman's wrestler, and I wouldn't put it past him, at least in a Harvey Whippleman role. So, David, why don't you give us a little background about yourself. Who do you say that you are?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on here. I really respect what you guys do, and without guys like you two, we would be nowhere. I need to make that perfectly clear.
Go on. Sorry, I'm just kidding.
I guess, I mean, for me, I'm basically who I am. I'm a kid who had a tragic event happen. 1997, my mom passed away at 38 years old. And I had a brothers and sisters. And I don't want to give a long, sob story, but, I mean, I was bullied in school. I was picked on, beat up almost all the time. And, I mean, for me, it was my dream. I always, like, wrestling. I mean, I had a great family life. Don't get me wrong. The family was fantastic. But wrestling was the only thing that I just seemed to attract to. I wasn't involved in any other sports. I mean, I played baseball and crap when I was younger, but I really didn't care. Wrestling is what enthralled me. And so when I got the opportunity to be involved in professional wrestling, I jumped at it. Met Johnny Valentine and kind of went from there. I'm a guy who I never really wanted to wrestle. I mean, I did just to fulfill a dream, but I always saw myself as a promoter, and I always just want to put on good shows. I want to help people out. On a grand scale of things, I didn't do anything. Like, I'm not a guy, I mean, a lot of people like to tell me that I have, but on a grand scale of things, there's plenty of people who have done way more. I've been very fortunate. I've been very blessed. I've been very lucky to work with the people that I have gotten to work with over the past 15 years. I'm just blessed to be a part of this business. I made a lot of mistakes when I was younger in this business, and I've tried to mend a lot of fences in the last 5 or 6 years. And now I'm kind of moving on into some other things in film and creative web media and stuff like that. So, but I love this business. I'll probably always be a part of this business until the day I leave this world, and I'm very blessed to be a part of this business. It's a true honor to still be a part of it after all these years.
So, as a kid growing up, who are some of your favorites to watch?
People find this funny. Andre the Giant is what drew me to professional wrestling. And he is my all-time favorite. And he is what drew me, this giant. Now, in my younger days, my father used to take me to see World Class Championship Wrestling at the Will Rogers Coliseum. I don't remember any of these things, but he tells me a story, which is funny, because I worked a show with the One Man Gang back in 1999. I was actually on the same show as the One Man Gang. My father took me to a World Class Championship Wrestling show in the 80s at the Will Rogers Coliseum here in Fort Worth. And apparently the One Man Gang scared me so bad that I jumped in my mother's arms and started crying. And I told him that story when I was 17 years old and I was wrestling in Louisiana. Made him feel great. But Andre the Giant, like when I started getting older and I started grasping, obviously Hogan, Randy Savage, Andre the Giant. I watched a lot of WWE. I'll be PC here. I watched a lot of WWE when I was growing up, and I didn't watch a whole lot of Jim Crockett Promotions. And of course, I lived in this territory, so World Class Championship Wrestling was really big. I was a big fan of the Von Erichs. I was a huge fan before anybody else was, and I can say this, of Stunning Steve Austin. For some reason, I just like that. When he pulled down Chris Adams' ex-wife's pants on TV and started spanking her, and they put a big black spot, I loved that. I think I was like 9 years old. But Andre is what really drew me, and Randy Savage, and Hogan, and the Warrior. And again, that I think that's missing today. These larger than life individuals were box office worldwide phenomenons, and that's what drew me to professional wrestling, was those guys right there.
Wow. So you spoke about world class. So you were a big Von Erichs fan. You were a big Stone Cold or Stunning Steve Austin fan. Who were some of your other favorites to watch? Who are some of the guys that you really remember?
Well, I mean, the feud I remember, the rivalry I remember, I mean, obviously there was the Freebirds and the Von Erichs, but I was still maturing. But the feud that I remember was Eric Embry and Christy Pringle against Devastation Incorporated. And I was, in fact, I was just like, oh, this is so great. I can't wait for General Skandar Akbar. God bless his soul. I love that man. Again, I talk about being blessed to have the conversations that I did and to know Akbar like I did. Nothing will ever replace that in my life. But at the, when I was a kid, I hated Skandar Akbar. And I always wanted him, to get his. So that's the feud I remember. I remember, like, the big steel cage match with Eric Embry and Skandar Akbar. Eric Embry's like, I'm finally going to get you in a steel cage. And Cactus Jack and Gorgeous Gary Young came up from under the ring in the Sportatorium and just beat the tar out of Eric Embry. I was at the Will Rogers Coliseum the night that Gary Young and Mick Foley, Cactus Jack, took on Eric Embry and Percy Pringle in the scaffold match. I was in the building when Cactus Jack got thrown off the scaffold. I remember because Mark LaRance was stuffing his face with a hot dog and I asked him for an autograph, along with Frank Dusick. But that was the feud that I really, really remember. And that was probably the last big thing they did here in World Class before Jerry Jarrett had come in and took over the promotion and started calling it the USWA. And I guess the other big feud that I remember, it kind of got a little bit of start here in World Class, but it was mainly USWA feud with Sonny Steve Austin and Chris Adams. I think that was the last hot rivalry that happened down here in North Texas during that era with Steve Austin and Chris Adams.
You know, for a while it seemed like Chris Adams was always the stepstone before the guy became a huge main event. I know that they did that with Steve Austin, and I know that there were a lot of guys throughout the years that when you were ready, you went up against Chris Adams.
Yes. He was, again, Chris is another guy I got to know. And, you know, putting his personal life aside and what happened in his later years, when Chris Adams was on, I saw him wrestle main event Mike Fox in 2000. I saw him do indie shows, and I was on these indie shows, and I was around him. Man, that guy just could turn it on, even in his later years. And in his earlier years, him and Gino Hernandez and the matches he had with Kevin Von Erich and just Steve Austin and all these guys. Chris Adams is probably one of the most underrated guys, I know, in Texas history, but in wrestling history, because he could turn it on. When he was on his game, very few people could touch Chris Adams, and I think he could have been a top star in the World Wrestling Federation, and for some reason it just didn't happen, but I think he could have been when he was hot.
So how did you finally get into the wrestling business, and who were some of your trainers? What was that experience like?
I met Johnny Valentine, who is an icon. I know that word gets thrown around in our business a lot, but my trainer was a certifiable legend. For people who don't know who Johnny Valentine is, he's the father of Greg the Hammer Valentine. And Johnny Valentine, Dave Meltzer, for those who follow the Wrestling Observer and Figure Four Weekly, Dave Meltzer had an interview with Terry Funk. I think it was a couple of years ago. And he asked Terry Funk, what's missing from professional wrestling today? And Terry Funk said, Johnny Valentine. That's what's missing from professional wrestling today.
Wow.
And he was Johnny, and my dad told me stories about him. Johnny Valentine headlined for Vince McMahon Sr. against Bruno Sammartino in Madison Square Garden. He was one of the biggest heels in the history of professional wrestling. During the golden era of George Wagner and Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, and he had feuds with Wahoo McDaniel, and he just the Funks and the Briscoes and Gene Kaminsky and Gary Hart and the late great Killer Carl Cox and Fritz Von Erich. Johnny Valentine would, and I met him. It was a gym here in Fort Worth, and I met him. He'd been paralyzed in 1975 in a plane crash with David Crockett and Nature Boy Ric Flair, and there was a couple other people involved as well.
Wow, and he broke his back. Plane crash.
Broke his back. Paralyzed from the waist down. So he was on crutches. He was on crutches for about 20 years. And So I met him at a gym. He had a little wrestling school going on. And Scott Putzke was one of his trainers, son of Ivan Putzke, and a guy named Larry Green, who's an IHW Hall of Famer. And Johnny looked at me, and the thing about Johnny is he didn't open up to anybody, and it took him a while to open up to you. But and I didn't think he liked me for a while, and I met his wife, and his wife was really cool. But I got the dog beat out of me. They saw something in me because Johnny looked at me, and he said, "You're too small, kid." And I was like, okay, but I still want to do it. Come on, man. If I fail, I fail. My mom had just passed away, and this was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm getting this opportunity. So Johnny sat me down. He said, "I'm going to train you because I like you, because you're passionate." He said, "I'll train you to be a wrestler, but I think you're going to make a real good promoter, but I'll train you." So for the next few weeks, I got the dog beat out of me. I had no idea. None whatsoever of how hard this was running the ropes. I was, they're making around the ropes 100 times. I mean, there's not an ounce of fat on me, but I'm in horrible shape, still am to this day. And we went through that. And then about 6 or 7 months into it, Johnny had some health issues, and he moved his school out to Hearst. And by that time, IHW in the backyard, which is where IHW started, it started getting some traction and some attention. So we got a ring, and people from the NWA Southwest, which was the territory down here, it's pretty much the only show running in North Texas at that time. And everybody was there every Friday night. Rodney Mack and Team Extreme and Necro Butcher and Joey Corman and The Canyon, Dr. X, Hoster Fernandez. The list goes on and on and on. They were all there.
Huh? Myself and my mother would go to there quite often, too. We loved it over there.
Well, then, Justin, me and you probably know each other, and we just haven't seen each other in about 15 years, but I was up there every Friday night.
Well, we kind of went in shifts, but then didn't. But, yeah, I remember there was some great wrestling that went on at that time.
They started coming over to us, the talent, and they started working for us in a backyard, and we started getting some attention. So I made a choice. Johnny gave me a choice, and he said, and I regret this, looking back, I regret it. He said, "You can continue doing what you're doing in the backyard. I don't really approve of it." He said, I know you're having fun, and I know you're passionate. He said, "But you need to come finish training with me." And I didn't. I said, "Well, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing because we're having fun. I'm with my friends, and we're getting some attention. We're drawing crowds." Hindsight, shouldn't have done that. I would later pay for that when Johnny passed away, but that's what I did. So that's how I actually broke into the business.
Wow, there's some interesting stuff there. So tell us what that atmosphere was like in the early NWA Southwest, or I guess it's not really early, but like, what was it like in that territory? What were some of the names that came out? What were some of the big, what do you think is the legacy of that era of the NWA Southwest?
The first time we went, like the first time we ever heard of it, Dan the Beast Severn, who was the NWA heavyweight champion, was defending the belt against Rugged Rod Price. And that was huge at the time, because Dan Severn, he hadn't started in WWE yet, but he had won all the UFCs, and I like Dan Severn. To this day, Dan Severn's the nicest guy on the planet, number one. Number two, he's a phenomenal wrestler. So when Dan Severn came down here, we had never heard of NWA Southwest. We didn't know what the hell it was. So we went, the first match we saw, there's this lady behind us making all this racket. Rodney Bonneau, Red Dog, and Scott Putzke. Well, Putzke had just started with WCW. He was on Monday Nitro. This was on a Friday. So he beat Red Dog in about 30 seconds. And we're like, well, obviously this guy isn't any good. He just got beat in 30 seconds. Of course, he would later go on to be Rodney Mack, one of my best friends. And the lady behind us making all this racket, her name was Jazz. So, that was our first experience with NWA. And then Dan Severn and Rod Price were there. Crusher Kong and Awesome Kong were there. I'd seen them in WCW. Kit Carson of Chris Germany, Action Jackson, who I'd seen before, and a lot of new talent, Dexter Hardaway, and there's so many names, but because they were running weekly for a long time.
Yeah.
But I mean, some of the big stuff they had, a lot of good hardcore matches, and Kit Carson and Chris Germany were super cool. And of course, we became acquainted with Red Dog, and actually Rodney and Jazz, they would come here on a Friday. They would drive from Lafayette, Louisiana. When they came here, after a while, they would get a hotel, but after a while, they would start staying with me and my father. And soon, that would become the norm. Canyon, Dexter, I'm telling you, in our apartment, which was two bedrooms, we had about 8 or 10 wrestlers staying over there every weekend. Because the Oklahoma crew would stay here. The Louisiana crew would stay here.
Wow.
It was really fun. And then a lot more of my other friends. But check this out. So me and the NWA promoter, Ken Taylor, we had a disagreement. Because I thought they were doing some crappy stuff there. So I emailed him. I said, hey, man, I'm paying $10 a week, and some of this stuff absolutely sucks. And then I told him who I was. He said, I heard about your backyard show. You're a disgrace to the business. And he said, you know what? You're banned from my building. Okay, no problem. So this was in May of 1999, and this was a shoot. This is not an umbrella story at all. So ABC, WFAA, Channel 8, ABC affiliate here, had just come and did a story on IHW. So it was going to air on a Friday night. We were going to be on the 10 o'clock news. Mm-hmm. So I went to NWA to see my friend wrestle. Ken Taylor would not let me in the building. I was going to pay. I had $10. Ken, I was in the parking lot. I was yelling for Ken to come out and confront me. If you've never seen me before, folks, I'm not an intimidating individual.
Right.
No matter how much I want you to believe that I am, I'm not. So he sends two big security guys out to the parking lot to deal with me. And they tell me, they're like, we don't know why he just didn't let you in. You're not a threat. I said, that's what I'm talking about. So later we emailed each other and we got it worked out, and I started going back to the shows. And then later on, I would work for Ken Taylor. So it's funny how things work out. Yeah. But, you know, and then PCW came along, and then XCW, which began as Texas Championship Wrestling, came along. And so, you know, sadly, NWA just kind of fell by the wayside. But for a long time, it was the place to be. And without NWA, I wouldn't have met a lot of people, wouldn't have made a lot of connections. So as much heat as I had at the time with the organization, it did a lot for me. I had a lot of good times there. We would go to Hooters after the shows every Friday night. We would stay there till 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And a lot of my youth was spent at that Texas Indoor Speedway Arena, go-kart, laser tag, whatever the hell it was.
I remember where the Hooters is. I always used to joke with my mom about if she wanted to go there whenever we would go to NWA Southwest.
Yes. So that was my NWA experience.
Did you have any experiences with PCW?
Not in the early days. I didn't have an experience with PCW. I didn't even go to the show. I knew Mike Fox. Mike Fox's first show I was at in 1999. I was actually at ringside when he worked Scotty Master Blaster. I was actually there with Scotty because Scotty was the IHW champion, and that was Mike Fox's first match. So I knew a lot of the talent there. And what was it? 2004, 2003, Uncut started, and I was running a little developmental thing down here called NAWA DFW.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you've heard of it, maybe.
I haven't.
No problem. It's cool. It's a little warehouse in Halton City. And we never charged money, but we ran for 2 years. It was a place on Sunday afternoons that guys who were working at CW or PCW could come and just work, you know. And we had fans. We had a little warehouse. I mean, you couldn't fit more than 50 people in there. But we had workers. We had the Brown Brothers. We had Seth Shaib. We had John Allen. We had the Overboys. We had everybody was banging down the door to get into this place. There was no money. So I was running that. So PCW Uncut gets started, and they're looking for some momentum. So they come to me, and they want me to come work for them. They're like, well, you know, you don't get paid on Friday night. Well, you know, big shock. But whatever, it's PCW. It's the big dance. So, okay, I'll... What do you want me to do? So the promoter comes to me, and he says, "We want you to be a leper." And I go, "A what?" He said, "We want you to be a leper. We want you to be elf first." And I go, "Wait a minute. What in the hell is this?" So the booker was really cool. His name was Goo. He's a real nice guy, and he knew I was running my own show, so he always talked to me intelligently. He never talked down to me. He never tried to push me. "Well, this is PCW, kid. You gotta." He never did that. He was like, "Do this for me. Help me out. And then later on, you'll get to be yourself on the show. And then I'll try to get you on Full Throttle." Because I wanted to do at least one Full Throttle show. Now, I didn't do it every week, but that was the big show. So anyway, they come to me with this. They gave me zero direction whatsoever. And so I remember they told me to get doctor's clothes. I don't know what doctor's clothes have to do with being a leper. But anyway, so they gave me no directions. I went to the dollar store. I went to Walmart and got doctor's clothes. And I went to the Dollar General and I bought a bunch of Ace bandages. And I bought just the most disgusting smelling stuff I could find. I get to the building, and the first night, they wanted me to all be bandaged up. So I put the... And they wanted me to be masked, and they wanted me to wear the bandages around my head. So I got through the building. I kid you not, I had to get to the building around 6:30. The show started at 8. At 7 o'clock, I had to get ready. And it took me an hour to about an hour for people to get me dressed as elves first. So because people would have to wrap the bandages around my arms, around my legs, and I would have to put all this stuff on. So I get to the gorilla position. And they've given me no direction. And I know a little bit about leprosy, but that's it. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. And I never studied it because I'm like, it's wrestling. But I can go out and do whatever I want. And they'll believe it. I get into gorilla position. I'm like, what am I doing? He said, just go with, we'll follow your lead. So I get a crippled, I bend my back, and I just walk with this crippled feeling. And I walk out, and the crowd's like, what the hell is this? And I start putting my hand over my my arm over my head like a cat bathing himself. And I just look at people, and I bob my head back and forth, and I shake a little bit. And they did a gimmick for about 12, 13 weeks to where nobody would touch me. Not the ref, not the announcer. My opponent would leave. He'd get counted out. So I was undefeated for about 12 weeks. But then one night, there was a section called the heel section over there, and they were a bunch of smart marks. So one night, got to the ring, and I'm doing elves first, and all of a sudden you start hearing, David Fuller, clap, 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 clap. I get to the back. Me, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. So, but then again, it was only like five people, so it's not like a ring of honor. But anyway, I get to the back, and the promoter's like, we got to do something about that. I said, okay. I said, I can kill the gimmick, because that's really what I want to do. He said, no. He said, next week you're going to be David Fuller. I said, yes. He said, but we need elves first here. And I go, there's not two of me. Well, he walked backstage and he goes, Brent Masters. At this time, Brent Masters was my size. This is before he came back and got pregnant. No, I'm kidding. I love Brent. So Brent was my size. So they're like, can you be elves first? So I had to teach him how to be elves first the next week. So they came out, and they had me come out and cut a promo, and I was L's first manager. So then we went back and forth for a few more weeks, and then they did a thing where Seth Chai worked me, and Seth got shot and got his group, Chris Richter, Paul Lewis, and Pendragon had all wiped him down with sobs and ointments, and he beat the dog out of me, and... pretty much after that, Elf First was pretty much dead. But and then after that, I left, and then I met with the Bussies a few times about possibly coming in an office position. The Bussies were real cool to me. Thomas treated me very well. Mike treated me very well, but it just never worked out for whatever reason. I never came a part of the creative team. But we had a few meetings about it. And, you know, it is what it is. I've got no heat towards those guys. I thought PCW was phenomenal. They did a lot of good for the area. And it's definitely a miss today.
Yeah. So you also had the experience promoting. What was that like? How did you make the transition from on-screen talent to behind the screen?
Somehow, when I started IWE with Brian Ryder and Chris Wolf, we started it in Chris Wolf's backyard because we're all buddies, we're best friends, and now me and Chris Wolf, he's my brother-in-law. But I was somehow, I got delegated the promoter's job. Don't know how it happened. I didn't win a lottery. There was no drawing. There was no, wishbone. I don't know how it happened. They're just like, you're the promoter. Thanks. Wonderful. So I was always the promoter for IHWE. It's very hard because I was having to do both. And it was really hard. So I loved it, though. I loved the challenge. But it was very hard because a lot of times, myself, I would be in one of the top positions on the card, and people would be like, well, you're putting yourself over. I'm like, well, I don't disagree with all that. I think that may be part of it. But another part of it was, it's depending on people. And who's going to be more passionate about this than me? It's my company. It's my money. But I see that now, looking back. But it was hard, man, and I had people in my ear telling me, you should do this, you should do that. And but I wanted to wrestle. So I ran IWE from about 98 until about 2001. And then we stopped IWE. Then I went and wrestled for about 2 years. After that, I came back. I took about 8 months off, came back and ran NAWA DFW. I was the promoter slash booker and an on-screen talent for 2 years. That ran its course. And then after that, I wrestled from 2005, 2006, 2007. 2008 rolled around, and I was actually going to start getting involved in the horror movie business, and I made some contacts. And I was actually getting involved with some other things. I was going to start HHC Promotions, and we had an IHW reunion, just a dinner, and people started like, oh, you ought to bring it back, you ought to bring it back. And finally, my wheels started turning. And so finally I said, okay, we'll bring IHW back for one night only. We did that in October 2008. We had Skandar Akbar, Bill Mercer, and Mark Lawrence there. It was a big night. We drew 250 fans. Mm-hmm. Now, think about that, Justin. You go to a lot of these shows. I'm not bragging, but for a show that had not been around in years, and nobody liked us. Everybody hated us on the smart boards. Nobody liked me, ever. I don't think anybody does. Justin does, but he's a nice guy. we drew 250 fans, and that was huge, and the show was such a success that I was like, okay, we'll run a few more. Well, a few more turned into just this beast. So I kept wrestling, but promoting these shows was getting harder and harder. I was like, oh, I can't do both. I kid you not, Justin, from 2009 till 2011, I had no personal life whatsoever. I didn't sleep very much. From the time I woke up every morning, which is usually about 5 or 6, till the time I went to bed, which is usually about 1 or 2, my phone was always ringing. I was always on the internet. I was promoting my show. 2009, I was still wrestling, and I'm sorry if I'm going into too much detail.
You're fine. You're fine.
2009, I was still wrestling, but I started to. I'd been dropped on my head in 2000 in a match in Covington, Texas, and I had temporary paralysis. I was a power bomb from the top rope to the ring gone wrong, and the guy who did it didn't know what he was doing, and he power drove me, and I landed on my head, and I couldn't feel my arms and my legs for about 1 minute, but got out, escaped. Had about 3 concussions over the next few years. 2009 rolls around, and I started losing feeling in my right arm and leg, and so I started to get worried. I didn't have any health insurance, but I was still running IHW, and we were in a war with another company over here called OXW, and their promoter had told me his goal was to put me out of business. And he was running right around the corner from me.
Ooh.
And Victory Crown Championship Wrestling had just started at the Rick Flair Theater. I always had a great relationship with DCCW. Me and the promoter were real cool. Me and LaMotta were real cool because LaMotta worked for me.
Yeah.
So that wasn't really a concern. But at the same time, if your show, if Victory Crown show is so phenomenal and your show isn't on par, eventually your show is going to be gone.
Right.
Because there's really only one show. There's only room for one show in each market. So I was like, I can't quit now. I can't, like, we didn't have, like, we had Wally, or, like, and this sounds so egotistical. I was going out there, and I was killing myself, and I was trying to bring the crowds in, and then LaMotta came, and then Wally came, and then Mike Fox came, and such, and these people all started coming back in. Mm-hmm. But I promised myself, I said, I'm going to do a program with SB1, who was my champion, and I'm going out that way. So my matches got shorter. My time on the shows got shorter. It got to the point where I couldn't do a whole lot in the ring anymore. But I made myself a promise that this is how I was going to go out, and I think I deserved it. So I did the match with SB1 in December, and we did the stipulation where if I lost, I'd have to retire. And nobody in that building thought I was going to lose that night. So when he pinned me 1-2-3, you hear nothing. Hush silence in the crowd. And we did this big retirement ceremony. And then I went away. Like, I was there at the show. And we did about three shows after that. And then I finally came back as the owner. But during that time, at the beginning of 2010, I finally gave in and went to the doctor. And they did an MRI. Mm-hmm. And they came back and said, you have significant nerve damage. And they told me that if I wrestled again, it could lead to permanent paralysis, or you will just be in constant excruciating pain for the rest of your life. So I had decided that, because I was going to come back and do a few matches every once in a while, and I was just going to do it just to help young guys. But at that point, I didn't tell anybody about this. Nobody knew until just recently. I just started opening up about it. My wife knows and a few other people know, but at the time that it happened, nobody knew. I quietly just said, okay, I'm done. Now I just need to focus on being a promoter. And when I made that decision, the shows got a lot better. I brought in Knight of XCW to help me run the shows. The shows were real smooth. We had best talent coming in. We were kicking ass. We were on 250, we had 320 fans in August of 2010 here at Fort Worth with Maniac Matt Bourne. The shows were phenomenal. There was a part of me that really missed performing in front of that, because when I was doing IHW, we had 100 people, and now we got 300. But I was like, no, and I still got to go out and perform. I still got to do promos and be involved. I was supposed to do a match with Seth Shai in 2010, but a week before the show, I just told Seth, I was so nervous about, you know, bombing and getting hurt. And I trust Seth to death, because me and Seth are real good friends. But I just told him, I said, I can't do this. I can't do this to the show. And we worked so hard to get off the ground. So we made a real quick change, and I put Gigolo in my spot. And that was the right move. And this last show, last June here at the Horseman Club, I was pushed by a few people, Rodney Madge and Mike Fox. And they were like, y'all to wrestle, man. Y'all to do something. And spoiler, 2000 was, he was retiring. This was going to be his last match. Mm-hmm. So we did a thing where, it was I turned heel. Mike Fox worked Showtime with Scott Summers. I turned heel in the beginning of the show. And the main event was Franco DeAngelo against Rodney Mack. And Rodney Mack turned heel. It was WCW. There were like three heel turns in one show. But I didn't care. We hadn't run a show in a year, so, you know, we had to do a lot in this one show to make up for lost time. So the main event turned out to be Gigolo James Johnson, Fuller 2000, Showtime Scott Summers, and Franco DeAngelo against Rodney Mack, main event Mike Fox, Rudy Boy Gonzalez, and Seth Shai. And an all-star match. And the plan was for me to come out at the very end and put myself in the match and then quickly get beat by Spoiler. So I'm sitting there, nervous as hell. I feel like I'm green as goose crap, and it's my first match because I see all this talent in the ring, and I see this phenomenal match going on, and I know I got to go in there and probably screw it up. So luckily, got over my jitters. I went in there. I did my thing. Spoiler put the claw on me. I tapped out really quickly. I got 1, 2, 3. Spoiler went on to have his knee replacement. He retired, and I got to – it was really cool because I got to team up with Fox. I got to be in there with Rodney. And, but yeah, I was, there was a lot of concern for my family that night. And my wife now, she was there with me that night. And she was worried. But luckily nothing happened, a lot of trust. So, but yeah, promoting, man, for me, promoting, I always had to be doing something. I always had to be doing PR. I always had to be filming promos. I was always on the phone with my talent. It was creative juices all the time. There wasn't like a break. Like, I mean, I say that and people don't believe me, but if you knew me those 2 years, you know there was no break. I lived here. I was single, no personal life whatsoever. And I mean, now, like, some days I wake up and I don't know what to do. And my wife's like, "What's wrong with you?" And I'm like, "I got no show to run. I don't know what to do. This is weird." So, but, you know, granted, I think I needed a break, and the stress is gone, and thank God. Man. And let me add to that. Me, I'm real anal about things, so I was involved in every aspect. Like, I would stay up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to approve artwork. I would stay up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with my video team working on video wires, and I was involved in every aspect. My photographer would stay up with me, and he would shoot me action pictures and tell me. I was involved in every aspect. I had teams, but I was involved in every aspect. I wouldn't, you know, give somebody, it was my money, it was my baby. So I was involved in every aspect. And when, you know, if the city got pissed or something that went on in our building, I'm the one who got hammered.
Yeah.
I mean, so for me, like, I had a booker, but it was just me. There was no money backer. There was no investor. It was me, and yeah, it had its moments, man. There were some days where I wanted to rip a little hair I had out, but I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world because it made me help watch on the person now, and it's definitely an experience. It's the hardest job I've ever had. I've worked for 2 multi-million-dollar companies, and I worked for the school district. I've done sales. I've done management. This is the hardest job I ever had, and it was my life. It was my job. It was my life. It was the way I made my money. I paid my bills. So it was, yeah, it was tough.
So I know that you worked with a very young necro butcher. What was he like in his early days? What was it like watching him develop into the guy that you see now?
He called me on the phone one day. It was like in 98. And our shows were terrible. They were dreadful. Half the talent hadn't been trained. I mean, we had a few guys that knew what they were doing, Rodney Mack and stuff, but for the most part, they were god-awful. So he calls me on the phone, and he says, "I want to come work for you. My name's Dylan Summers." I'm like, "Who the hell is Dylan Summers?" And he calls me on the phone. He's like, "Hey, man, I've been wrestling this private deal in Summers. I was trained by Black Bart." I said, "Okay, that's cool. I know who Bart is." So he says, "I want to do something different. I kind of got this gimmick I want to try, but I want to run it by you." I'm like, "What? You don't even know me. Why are you running anything by me?" He's like, "Well, you know," he said, "so I want to do something. I want to do something. He's like, "I want to paint my face." And I said, "Okay, big deal. Paint your face. You know, multi-way. There's 1,000 guys who do that." He said, "No, I want to be real crazy, and I want to be something butcher." He said, "Something maybe like the Necro Butcher. What do you think?" And I was like, "I've never heard of it." And I said, "I'll tell you what. You come up here." He was living in Killeen, Texas. I said, "You come up here in January, and you can do it. And I'll put you in a hardcore match, and I'll pay you $10. And that's it." He said, "I'll be their boss." So former Star Telegram is at this show. They're taking pictures. He comes. Never met the guy before. Like, the first time I met him was when he pulled up in Chris Wolf's driveway. The locker room was Chris Wolf's bedroom. So He's there and he's so he goes and the guy he's working, Damon Richards, he never heard of him either, and he's all asking me, "Hey, is this guy cool?" I'm like, "I don't know." You'll find out in a few minutes. So he gets in there and he beats the dog shot out of Damon Richards, and just he's stiff as hell. And then he pulls out a fluorescent light tube, and I nearly had a bowel movement in my pants. He pulls out a light tube, he busts it over Damon Richards' back, he takes the jagged edge, and he proceeds to cut Damon Richards in the head. And I'm like, oh my God. The Full Restore Telegram is there covering this show.
Wow.
So, but we loved it. It was like, oh, this is awesome. And we were insane hardcore wrestling. So, mm-hmm. I just said, Damon was okay afterwards. He was a little stiff. Necro, he put the guy over. Necro came up. He did the job and took the money. He said, let me know when you can have me back. And so, that Sunday, let's see, the show was on a Sunday. The following Sunday, front page of the Metro section is a picture of the Necro Butcher with a light tube over Damon Richards' back. And a big, long story. Nearly took up a whole page about our backyard company. And I made the decision then that Necro, because Rodney was going to win our title. A week later, Rodney was going to win the IHW championship. Rodney got called up to ECW. And so when Rodney got called up, I said, that's the guy we're going to put our company on. He's the one who's going to lead us because he's so different and he's nuts. And that was what was in 99. It was ECW. It was the Attitude Era. That's exactly what people wanted to see. So Necro, he tells everybody to this day that I came up with the gimmick. And that's not true. And he tells me to lie. And I won't do it. Because I love Dylan. And he's earned everything he's ever gotten. The only thing that I did, nobody else would let him do the gimmick. I did. So, and he wasn't held down. He was held down a lot of places before he came to work for me. He wasn't held down. The only thing I did was take the handcuffs off, and I let him run free. And he came back, and we remained close friends, and I'm so proud of him. We inducted him into the Hall of Fame last year. Mm-hmm. We still talk from time to time. He's nuts. Because I had to wrestle him a few times. He hit me with a chair in May of 1999, and he gave me a concussion. Because I don't remember. I remember just seeing black. But I got thrown out of a battle royal. And instead of turning around, I see this big blue steel chair coming down at a rapid rate. No time to get my hands up. And took the chair shot, went down, and just a shot in the head. And then he picked me up, took me to the bag, he put his arm around me. He said, "You took it, kid. I've got your back from now on." I'm like, okay. And then a few months later, we were down at some show in Clifton, Texas, at some rodeo arena. And Dylan would always take care of me. He'd always bring me to shows, and he'd get me work as a manager. He booked me on his shows. So Dylan took care of me. But at Clifton, Texas, we're at this rodeo show, and I managed this guy who was absolutely dreadful. Managed him, got a lot of heel heat. And then they were like, "We're going to do a battle royal just because, obviously, our show wasn't that great. We're going to do a battle royal and make people think they got their money worth." Ooh. So, wonderful. So Dylan gets this idea that one of his students is going to bench press me. Dylan's going to get thrown out, and then one of Dylan's students is going to bench press me over the top rope to the floor, and Dylan's going to catch me. I don't trust Dylan. I said, "You'll move. I know you will. You'll let me fall in the damn dirt." He said, "No, kid, I got you. Fine, whatever. It's not like I got a whole lot of face on the matter. This big jacked up guy wants to pick me up over his head. It's not like I can sandbag him."
Yeah.
So he tosses me over, Dylan catches me, he rolls through, and as I'm getting up, I hear, "Tiger Bomb." And I'm like, "What?" By the time I say that, he's got me up in the air, and we fall, and I didn't feel a thing, thank God, because I probably wouldn't be walking right now. He slaps me on the stomach, "Good job, kid." So those are my NecroButcher stories.
Wow. And the fact that you were able to, that you can tell people that you once paid NecroButcher $10 for a wrestling show, I think is awesome story, because I guarantee you he's not getting $10 now.
No. And him being in the wrestler, like the guy who started with me, like he's an ICW original, and the NecroButcher got his name in ICW, was mentioned in the, during the Academy Awards. That it gets no better than that, my friend.
Yeah. Oh man, I remember the. I remember watching that movie, and you know, I've always told my wife stories of Necro Butcher, and to see him there, you know, on the movie screen with, you know, Mickey Rourke was just so insane, and you know that scene where they're showing the thumbtacks and the staple guns. I'm thinking, if Mickey Rourke does not win this Oscar, there is something wrong with this world. And it turns out that there's something wrong with this world.
There is something wrong with this world. You know, it's funny, when Necro got the role, he called me immediately, said, I'm going to be in a movie. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I'm going to be in a movie with Nicolas Cage. And I said, well, what's it going to be? He said, The Wrestler. And I said, the old Ed Asner movie? He said, yeah, it's a remake. I go, what the hell do you have to do with Vern Gagne and Ed Asner? And because I'm thinking, oh, The Wrestler, Vern Gagne, Billy Robinson, Dusty Rhodes, Ed Asner, okay. What? Nicolas Cage? What? So, and then he called me up. He goes, well, Nicolas ain't doing it. And I said, well, who's doing it? He said, I don't know. He said, just stay tuned to the internet. You'll find out. So, but yeah, he did it. He came down here in 2008, and right before he started shooting, and we talked for a long time. He when he comes down, man, he stays with either me or Wolf. I mean, he's still humble. He's been to my house so many times. I watched that man drink so much beer. I mean, I'll tell you another story. He got real drunk. We were at a show, Mineral Wells, and we came back up from Mineral Wells, and he got so drunk. I think he drank a 24 case of beer by himself. He goes into my bathroom, and he's looking to urinate. I'm trying to be his PC. He's going to urinate. He urinates in my cat's litter box. And he comes out laughing. And then I had the inevitable task of being his medical aide after his match with Abdul the Butcher at NWA Southwest. He got cut open so many times that he drove back here. His wife was screaming at him, and he said, he came up to my apartment, there's blood all over him, and he's like, my wife's mad at me, she won't take care of me, I need you to do this. So I had to perform, I had to clean up his wounds with and drive him back to the arena. So
good time. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you've moved on from the promoting the world of wrestling, and so now you're working in the world of horror, and so you're doing a lot of pinup art and a lot of photography. I remember the one Jason type slasher spread that you did. That was pretty awesome. Me being the old school horror fan that I am, I loved that. And, you know, that was some good stuff. So what are you doing nowadays?
Well, I'll tell you a funny story about that in a second. No, HXC Promotions, I've always wanted to do it, and I've always been told I'd be good at it. It's just something, it's a branch of what I've been able to do in wrestling and meet all these people. Without the world of wrestling, I would not be doing this, because I've met so many talented people. And the pinups are gorgeous, very talented, very down-to-earth ladies that I've met. And they're just fun, and they just want exposure, and they just want to work. So, I mean, like Flossie and CJ and Darissa and Little Bit, I actually discovered Little Bit, and Raylan, and I mean, they're so talented, and they're so cool. I mean, you know, like, they're just so cool people. I love hanging around them. I love hanging around them more than wrestlers sometimes. But no, I got involved with a lot of bands and promoting, and I want to do a movie I want to direct my own movie and produce it. I'm actually in talks to be in some kind of role for the Night of the Living Dead remake, from an office, from a behind the camera point of view. That's going to be out later this year. That would be awesome if I got the chance to do that, because I love the original. I was in a movie called The Reckoning, and back in 2010, we actually shot it the day of an IHWE show. I actually took 20 minutes out of my day preparing for my show to go shoot this film for The Reckoning, and we did it in one take. And I got to do that, so that was really cool. So it's just something I want to be part of. It's more like I'm trying to develop a new animation series in the fall that's going to start on YouTube and hopefully get some viral attention and maybe go from there, maybe create some awareness of what we're trying to do. But yeah, we're going to do pinup shoots. We're going to do car shows. I'd like to promote some concerts. I'm going to do a little bit of everything. It's going to be entertainment that you're used to, and there's going to be some taboo stuff that you're not used to. And that's what I like. I like thinking outside the box. I always try to do that with the wrestling shows. I'd bring in the pinup models. I'd bring in Ed Neal from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because I've developed friendships with these people. And I think you got to think outside the box of, you know, an indie show can only be good so many times. Sometimes you need to go outside the box, and you need to aim for that demographic. And there's a lot of horror movie fans out here. So, I mean, I'm trying to do a lot of different things, thinking outside the box. But that shoot, that was good. Originally, I was actually working with a guy, wrestling training, that is literally 7 feet tall, legitimately. He was going to be the killer. But a couple of days before, he pulled out. He couldn't do it. He had to go out of town for work. So we're stuck. I knew what I wanted, so I just told the models. I was like, well, I'll do it. You know, it's whatever. It's not a movie. I mean, literally, you could all kick my ass in a real fight. But,
right.
But it's a movie, you know. It's horror. And they're like, okay. They all felt comfortable because they all knew me. And, you know, they knew it was professional. So I did it, but I was sick as a dog up until that day. And I was sick for about a week, and I was in bed every day. And then that day, we were on that shoot for about 5 hours. And I was exhausted, because there's one scene in there with Machiko where we did a spot. And all the shots except Machiko's were just still shots. But Machiko's was a live action scene. Because I knew she had been training to be a wrestler, I knew I could do some stuff with her. And so we did a live action scene, and they just took shots from the live action scene. So I was actually snap-mirrored and bumped in the park during that live action scene. So I was exhausted after that, and I was out of breath, and I was like, man, it's a good thing I retired. I got no damn car here.
Machiko can now be seen in Anarchy Championship Wrestling down in Austin.
Correct.
The correct. Random plug.
Correct. So, but yeah. So that was fun. I'm hoping to do another one like that. We're going to get things going again in the fall as soon as I get moved and whatnot. But yeah, that's my new thing. And it's facebook.com/HXC Promotions if y'all want to check it out. We don't got anything going on right now, but soon that'll be changing. So we got some great, beautiful, very talented young ladies working with us.
All right. So that's where we can go find out more information about what you're doing right now on Facebook. And where do we find you on Twitter?
Twitter.com/HXCFuller.
And, you know, if anybody follows me, he is somebody that I talk to pretty often on Twitter. So you can also see that there as well. So. Well, David, I just wanted to thank you for the time you gave us tonight. You told some great stories, and I know you probably have a lot more. We'd love to have you on the show again when you get the chance. And, you know, we looks like we have plenty of stuff here to give a pretty decent interview. So just wanted to thank you for the time. And anything you wanted to say, any shout-outs?
The XCW Wrestling Institute is out of Denton. They're doing some good stuff out there. A lot of clinics every week. So Facebook.com/XCW Institute. And the ICW Hall of Fame is an annual thing we do every year down here, honoring the superstars of Texas professional wrestling. You can find out that information at facebook.com/ICW Pro Wrestling. Next year, we will be honoring the legendary late great Killer Carl Cox and the iconic Bruiser Brody. And four more names will be announced as we get ready for next year's Hall of Fame. So if anybody's curious, to check out that. It's at facebook.com/IHWProWrestling.
All right. So thank you, David, and appreciate all the time you gave us tonight.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a wonderful night. Thank you again for what y'all do.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.